The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever, and due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Kroot.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition, the happier happy hour, and it's getting better right now, Dom. We got a fine guest. He's joined live via stream. He is former U.S. attorney, still an attorney, still a friend of ours. He's James Santel, and he's also the host of Amicus, a law review on Saturday morning. So, Jim, thanks for making time for us on a Friday afternoon.
Hey, always a pleasure. All those things continuing in our lives, right?
Jim, let me ask you about the days of Donald Trump's life. Another trial, maybe never. Eileen Cannon, what the hell is going on in Palm Beach today? She's having a hearing to consider the dismissal. I mean, the guy got caught dead to rights with hundreds of classified documents, and she's considering a dismissal, and I read a headline, although she's suspicious of Trump's claims, she's also suspicious of the prosecutors. She's supposed to be a federal jurist. What do I not understand being a layperson here, Jim?
I think you've got it just right. I think you have attended the school of practical sense and common sense out there, Mike, no doubt about it. So, yes, she is entertaining three, count them three, not one, not two, but three, days of oral argument on these motions. She's got a lot of them pending in front of her. And again, defense counsel can do that. That's sort of their role, to test the government's case. But you also have motions that are filed routinely that are frivolous. And a lot of these are in just that category. Today, she's determining something that has been settled back in, I think it was the Nixon administration, again, the Clinton administration, about special counsel, these situations where, again, a couple of different iterations, but Congress establishes a mechanism for the Attorney General to appoint someone who is somewhat apart from the Department of Justice. This has been settled. This is the sun rises in the east once again, and we're having at least today and perhaps part of Monday and into Tuesday also to decide whether or not that's true. She is entertaining everything as if all of these things are legitimate. I was thinking about this earlier today, knowing we'd talk about it. Again, defense counsel will do this routinely. I do not fault them at all. But what routinely judges will do then is say, I've also identified all numbers 5 through 23, all these other motions to dismiss. I've looked at them. They're interesting. They're all dismissed. They're all denied. And that's what should happen here. These are not real. These are not serious motions. They're not credible arguments are being made, but she is taking them on as if they are. And the impact is exactly what you just said, Mike, which is delay, delay, delay. And that can go on almost interminably if she continues to do this exactly as she is.
Now, Jim, if I may, given the fact that she's kind of a rookie judge, right? She just kind of got this thing. Granted, she was put in there by Trump, but I mean, given the importance of this case, could she just be dotting her I's and crossing her T's and making sure everything's on the up and up? So even if she, you know, leans towards Trump, history will not judge her for, you know, blowing past some perhaps arguments that could impact the case.
Sure. She is certainly creating at a minimum a record for history, but also a record in this case. And so if at some point all this goes up to the Court of Appeals, which it will, perhaps in 2026 or sometime beyond, she can say, yes, I looked at all this. Look, Appeals Court, I had days of hearings on these issues. And so you can't fault her for entertaining them. And yes, she does have to enter some orders resolving all of these borderline and downright frivolous motions. But the point is, you don't take hours and hours deciding that it is raining in Wisconsin today, or that These basic things are understood, or at most you give counsel. I'm going to give you 5 minutes to tell me what it is your basis is. And then there's no court of appeals in the land that will look at that and say, you did not properly resolve that. You didn't give it the time of day that it needed. They will affirm that on these ridiculous motions. And what we're having, nonetheless, is this situation where she is, again, as you said, maybe being an equal opportunity attacker. She doesn't like the defense necessarily, but also suggesting, she's asking, for example, Jack Smith's representative there, what's your connection to the attorney general? What's going on there? No business doing that whatsoever. That's inside the Department of Justice, just as she has no business asking inside the defense team, what kinds of conversations are you having? That is inappropriate. That also suggests to me that she is not just a rookie judge, but she's not taking advice from anybody who may be telling her, even whispering in her ear, Eileen, knock it off. Don't do this. This goes on, and we've got no trial date, no time soon.
James Santel, our fine guest, we listen to his counsel. Jim, Eileen Cannon, this judge that caught the Trump classified documents case, despite the fact, in the walk-up to this, she was slapped down by the 11th Circuit somewhat strenuously, as I understand the language. And above and beyond that, a few of her colleagues came to her, encouraged her to recuse, both because of her inexperience and also because of her seemingly clear partisanship in favor of the defendant. And they decided they were going to go public and tell the press, Jim, this is not the norm, is it?
It is not. It is not. And we know as a practical matter, there's nothing wrong with it. Federal judges talk to federal judges and magistrates all the time. We know that in scheduling some of these other trials, Judge Mershon was talking to Tanya Chutkan across the state and the federal system. Nothing wrong with that at all. The conversations are not only appropriate, but they can produce good things. Here, you've got this very reliable reporting. I've got a couple of judges who come to her and say, you know, Eileen, probably a best thing for you to recuse yourself. And you just hit on the most significant thing that she could have and should have done, which is she can still believe that somehow all the things she said, this elaborate mechanism that she put in place, including having a special master before this case was even charged, extraordinary. She excoriated for it by the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. She could say, you know what? I still believe I was right. And I will stick with it. And for that reason, I don't want any appearance of impropriety. I'm going to leave this case to somebody else. That's what she should have done. Be a little bit dignified about, frankly, your incompetence early on. But nonetheless, go away and not handle this particular case. She has plainly rejected that. And again, it is a stunning thing that you also have reporting, presumably indirectly or perhaps somewhat directly, from these judges saying, yeah, we tried to sit down with her over coffee and have some conversation, and she's not listening, which again raises some other legitimate questions for the American public. Who is she listening to? If they're not listening to her colleagues, who else is she listening to, is saying, you know, have these multiple hearings days in end and entertain all of this and take your trial dates off the calendar and again entertain seriously things that make no sense whatsoever as a way of extending this indefinitely.
Jim, we've pondered, could Cannon be removed from this case? Obviously, oral arguments, whether or not the special counsel is appropriate in this case. How do we flip this script and find out if this Trump-appointed jurist is the appropriate judge for this particular case and then get her ass out of here, Jim? Because we want to see the trial. We want to see the evidence laid out. All we know is what's been reported in the press. You know what? A lot of what had been reported in the press regarding the New York, the hush money trial. I was surprised when the actual details came out at trial. Let's call it the evidence, Jim. How do we get to there?
That's that. We got to get there, right? And it's no time soon, but we got to get there. The longer this takes, it's the old phrase, justice delayed, justice denied, for the American public. And frankly, even for Donald Trump, he's got a right to a speedy trial, as do the people of the nation. And so what are the remedies? Jack Smith has been, I'm sure they have conversations like this, probably every 36 hours inside the Department of Justice. Is now the time that we go to the 11th Circuit? Is now the time we go to the chief judge? He has plainly signaled, including remember this jury instruction thing where she's asking them to put together jury instructions that would support a defense for Donald Trump. based upon the Records Act. It has no basis for it. Wildly premature, all that. Prompts you to think, again, what is going on here. He definitely is pondering doing something like going to the 11th Circuit and, again, filing with him a petition to have her removed from this. That is atypical. I don't want to say it's unknown, but it is extraordinary. He doesn't want to do it until he's got all of his list of eggs, if you will, all of them in order. He may be closing in on that. And as this goes on, he may find the time is getting short, if you will, even in the midst of this, to do that. I still wouldn't be, that certainly was within his capacity to go to a higher judge and make this petition. It's a big deal because plainly, if you don't get it granted, now you're back in front of the judge who you wanted to throw off the case. On the other hand, they're not getting along anyway. She is making shot nets at them. And this is not a happy situation inside the courtroom. Happy, of course, in very large air quotes there. So maybe there's not a great downside to this, but he's got to be thinking about it every single time this happens, including right now over the weekend when this continues to go on in her courtroom in Fort Pierce.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, host of Amicus, playing out 9 to 11 Central Time on the Civic Media Network. Jim, so the Supreme Court laying down some cases. There was an 8-1 case today regarding guns and domestic abusers that Clarence Thomas was seemingly on the wrong side of. But I want to get to the other one we're waiting on that pertains to Donald Trump, the case of whether or not the former president has absolute immunity. We haven't gotten it yet. Are we running out of time? Is it perhaps next Thursday, Friday? What's your sense on when that's going to drop in? Do you have a sense of what it might come down as?
Sure. A couple of things. Timing, it's getting short. We've got about 15 more cases, again, for the Supreme Court to decide. They're big ticket items. Those two are very big. We talk about the immunity cases being at the top of the list. This other Fisher case having to do the statutory predicate for the criminal charges against him, also very important. That will dictate what happens in that case in front of Tanya Chutkan. That's the election interference case in D.C. So they've been hanging on to this. We know two things. The oral argument surprised the heck out of everyone, I think, even people who are supporters of Donald Trump, when the Supreme Court decided to take very seriously these arguments that maybe, just maybe, there's a classification, a set of things that our chief executive can do that are crimes and for which there can be no impunity. That's extraordinary. And so they're still wrestling with that. My guess is, my answer to your question is, sometime at the very end of its present term, maybe next Friday, they will probably issue this opinion. Maybe go right before the 4th of July. I'm guessing it'll be among the very last cases they issue before they head off to the beach.
Tell you about time and being short on it. Jim, stick around. More Devil's Advocates.
I don't know if you know the Devil's Advocates, but the show is kind of a big deal.
Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Our friend James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus, 9 to 11 a.m. Central Time here on the Civic Media Network, sticking around for at least one more segment. Thank you for doing so, Jim. I want to get your opinion, counselor. I've had this conversation, and I'm looking for some guidance on how to phrase it and come back with it. The contempt of Congress charges, right? We had Navarro, who's currently in jail. We got Steve Bannon, who's supposed to report to jail. Going to go to the U.S. Supreme Court, try to get out of that one by, what, July 1st? We'll see what happens there. Those were for 4 months for not complying with, you know, congressional subpoenas. But we also have, you know, what, Merrick Garland now, the Department of Justice. He was apparently in contempt of Congress for not providing the recording, the actual audio of this investigation of the president on the documents case, although they did provide the transcripts. Executive privilege and so forth. How and why should Navarro and Bannon be prosecuted and put in jail for that contempt? And in this case, we got a guy like Merrick Garland, and hell, even Eric Holder back in the day also defied a subpoena regarding the gun smuggling and Fast and Furious case, something along those lines. But why is one different than the other? What's your comment on that?
Sure. And so, they are all in the category of contempt, right? It's failing to comply. It's failing to do what the order, the directive says. It goes fundamentally to the notion that prosecutors still have the requirement. We all expect them to exercise their discretion in making that decision. Simply because a political branch, in this case the Congress, makes a determination they don't like what the Attorney General is doing or what another agency head is doing, another member of the cabinet is doing. They can make that political finding. There's a related, but a different assessment that's undertaken by the people at Ninth and Constitution, which is where the Justice Department is, about whether or not that political finding is also criminal in nature. And you have to have, obviously, intent. You've got to have purpose. And here, the raising of the executive privilege by the White House has a whole lot more strength to it than it did when it was bandied about by Steve Bannon and by Peter Navarro. In those cases, they simply didn't comply at all. They didn't show up at all. Remember, too, that there were other people who were also referred by the Congress, including Mark Meadows and other people, for contempt of Congress as well, for the committee, the House committee. And the United States Department of Justice has said, you know what? We're not going to prosecute those. We just don't think they're sufficiently strong as criminal cases because there has been some compliance. Here, as you just accurately indicated, Dom, what you have is an attorney general who said, you know what? Already doing something probably isn't necessary, but I'm producing the entire transcript. Every last guffaw, every last chuckle of everybody during the course of this transcript, you will see that in the transcript. And that's as far as we're going to go. Now, it's not a matter of Merrick Garland saying, just go take a flying leap. I will not comply at all. He has complied with the spirit and the tenor, I would argue, the content of that order. And in a strange twist of fate, you talk about Eric Holder. I was there when this happened. He's found in contempt. One of the ways in which our system works is the people who determine whether or not there will be a prosecution are the people in, let's all say it together, the Department of Justice. So it's the very people, if you will, who are in that building who make that determination. Many people may look at that and raise their eyebrows and say, gee, how can that happen? You know, it's because, once again, we're living these extraordinary times when we've got these political findings that have no support in the law. And you have to have somebody somewhere independent of the attorney general, the attorneys general here, to make those calls. That's what's going on. And that's a lot of words, but there is a distinction here. And again, especially when the prosecutors can look at this and say, you know what, you're not getting anything more by the tape than you would by the transcript. We all know what this is about. This is to try to find those times when, in fact, the president during his interview was having difficulty finding the words or otherwise was not the paradigm of clarity. That's what this is all about. That's not a justice-based purpose for getting it. That's a political purpose, and that's the difference.
Jim Santel, your former boss, Eric Holder, the former attorney general under Obama, came out this week and is quite concerned that the U.S. Supreme Court, and I know you touched on this, but the U.S. Supreme Court could extend some sort of immunity to presidents, be it limited immunity for official acts or whatever the case may be. We don't know what the ruling's going to be. But I have a couple of questions. A, they've already voted on all of these rulings at this late hour, have they not, Jim? So there might be some clerks putting the final details, but all these rulings are effectively either drafted or in final details. Are they not, Jim? Do I have that part wrong?
Absolutely right. There may be some late nights and maybe some clerks running up and down the hallways saying, my boss wants this word changed. We're crossing this out. Take out your Sharpie. We're getting rid of this paragraph. There may be some changes in consents and concurrences or dissents and concurrences, but you're right. They voted and we're so close. Now we're refining this for final publication probably next week.
Okay. The fact that they've taken so long, I mean, my understanding, what the Whitewater tapes perhaps it was the Watergate tapes, took 16 days for the U.S. Supreme Court to rule. We've been going on 2 months. They didn't drop it on the last Friday here, meaning today. So maybe they go next week or hell, maybe they drag it into July. But every day they delay is really to the advantage of the defendant, Donald Trump. So I guess my question is it possible, and I thought we had discussed this once prior, Jim, is it possible by sending it back to the district court and saying, you know what, now you've got to litigate, now you've got to decide each and every case, whether or not it's an official act or a private act, could they not effectively, through their ruling, throw more sand in the gears?
Absolutely. You know, it'd be one thing for them simply to say, yes, the president is immune. that's clarity. Then the case is over, right? There is definitive. That's absolutely absurd. As a constitutional matter, that does bring the republic closer to its end, but they could do that. My guess is exactly what you just described, based upon the oral argument. You've got Amy Coney Barrett saying, well, let's send this back. John Roberts also saying maybe the lower court wasn't all that explicit here. My guess is they're going to put together some middling order that does direct the Tanya Chutkan, go back and apparently go through the evidence itself. There are only four counts here, and figure out which are personal, which are official, and then she's going to make some decisions about that. That's going to take months as oral argument. That can go back up to the Court of Appeals. That can go back up to the Supreme Court. Absolutely. It's a way of extending this not just beyond the end of the year, maybe well into next year and beyond. That's entirely possible. And that's what we may be talking about in about a week from now.
Jim, thanks for wrecking my weekend, man. Always leave them wanting more. If you want the rest of the story, tune in. Amicus, a law review. Tomorrow morning, 9 to 11 on the Civic Media Network with our good friend, James Santel. Jim, have a great weekend. I'll try to catch the show in the morning.
Thank you, Jim. Yep.
Good to be with you, gentlemen. Have a good
Grass-fed, locally raised, 100% organic. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition, a happier, happy hour indeed, rolling through it. Thank you to our most recent guest, a fine one, former U.S. Attorney James Santel. Catch his fine program, Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11. Check your local listings on the Civic Media Network. But, you know, one thing, there's never enough time, but we have trapped you people in your cars before. We know whenever we keep Jim late, then you get home and you sit in your driveway and you wait for Jim to finish, which, you know, we like, but it's hardly fair to those waiting on the fish fry. So tune in tomorrow for Jim. But one of the questions I'd like to have gotten to, Dom, July 11th is like 2 weeks from today. Am I wrong about that? Couple of Fridays from now?
Yesterday. July 11th is a Thursday.
Oh, Thursday. So
one, three, I'm sorry, three weeks.
About three weeks out. In 3 weeks, Donald Trump has sentencing in the hush money trial in New York. And the way they are acting, it's just like a ceremony of title. Convicted felon. Hell, he's fundraising off and had the best fundraising year month ever, yeah. Right? $141 million he raised.
Beating Biden by, what, $40 million, $50 million? Like big money, big money.
Very, very happy about the fundraising. And the convicted felon, you know, so what, right? Just title. No, it's a legal consequence. And the sentencing is coming down the pike here in 3 weeks, Dom. And of course, it could affect the political outcome of the RNC. They've already got alternative plans. You know, I don't think Trump's going to be down on Brady Street with us partying, man. He may not make it to Milwaukee. He could be under lock and key. You know, I wanted to ask Jim what his opinion was. And, you know, we're all just spouting opinions at this point, Dom. But do you think once there is a sentence that this has more gravity for the man? Now, we know the Fox News polling says that Joe Biden is eking up. Best polling Joe's had against Trump head-to-head since October of last year. So something is changing about the electorate. Contrary to what Jesse Waters says, the electorate is not locked in by June. It's moving. It's changing. It's a shifting electorate, at least the snapshots through the polling, Dom. But what happens once the man gets a year and a day or 3 years like Michael Cohen got or 90 days? But ultimately, there is a consequence. Well, that would be far too little. I think that would be far too little relative to the gravity of the alleged crimes.
He could very well get no jail time, of course, Kurt. I mean, given the circumstances, he may.
That does not feel appropriate to me.
No, I get it.
No, you know, the guy has shown no remorse, right?
No remorse.
Hasn't acknowledged the crimes. In fact, claims they're not crimes. My understanding is Alvin Bragg has asked for the extension of the gag order due to the many, many death threats he's getting.
So many.
So why wouldn't Juan Merchan throw the book at this guy at sentencing? Why wouldn't he? The only reason not to do it, if it was any other criminal defendant, not Donald Trump, you know he would throw the book. This guy'd be getting years, not a club fed, but at a real prison. Not the club fed's not a real prison, but you know what I'm saying. Maybe not Supermax, but he's going to prison. But this guy, you know, you're acting like 2 weeks house arrest, or I'm not saying you, I'm saying that is a presumption that's fair to have. They're not going to throw the book at this first offender, former president candidate. Because a couple years in prison, that certainly changes the outcome of the election, right? But so what, man?
So what? Exactly. It's absolutely irrelevant what the guy's day job is. You know what I'm saying? That's my position. And I would hope that the judge in any case, be it any candidate or teacher or firefighter or radio host, whatever the case is, that they're all judged equally under the law as it applies to them. And if it were anybody else, he's already gotten the slack. You know, I mean, 10 times violation of the gag order. Who would not be, you know, cooling their heels off for at least an afternoon in the judge's pen if we're not for a guy like Donald Trump? So if that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's already been given. The slack, the benefit has already been derived. Sentencing's not that part. You did it, you get it, you go.
Don't yada 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 the sentence. The sentence is the most important part.
Of course.
And I'm asking not just you, Dom, but also the audience. 844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. You can join us on the party line. But the question, does it change the impact? Because this title, this 34-time convicted felon, I like saying it lots and lots of times over and over again, as many times as he has been convicted, I like repeating it. But I went out there to the Racine where there were, you know, 8,000-10,000 people at the Festival Park on Tuesday, out by the lakeshore, out to see their man, Donald Trump. And almost universally, they called it a sham. The trial's a sham. And they didn't really think it was any big deal, right? The Trump supportive. Understanding.
I'm voting for a felon. They're proud of it.
Yes. Yes. I actually, and I did not post video of these people. I've got a photo and some video. I interviewed them. A couple, one wearing a red version and one wearing a blue version. And, you know, having your appropriate Trump wear on at the Trump rally, that's an important thing. People really dress the occasion. You know, if you don't have Trump on your ass, on your shirt, on your hat, on your whatever, you're not trying. But these people were red and blue matching, I'll vote for the felon 2024 Trump shirts. They were proud to vote for the felon. But here's my question. Does the actual sentencing make it sink in to a greater degree? Because even right now, I mean, 34-time convicted felon. Nothing changed. Really about my perception of Donald Trump. I always knew he was criming. He's been convicted. I was a little surprised at the speed of the jury conviction. I was a little nervous about the Cohen testimony, but ultimately, when the conviction came, even from my liberal perspective, I can't say my perception of the man has significantly changed just because he's got a title behind his name. Could be 34-time appearing on The Apprentice. But once he has a sentence, I think that changes things. What do you think? What do you think, Dom? What do you think, audience? 844-967-2789. Dom, I'm going to go to the audience first. My grievance is there hadn't been enough pain inflicted from these convictions.
There's no consequence to speak of yet.
Yet. It's not even like it's negative. You know, if I was 34 times convicted of a felony, best case scenario, I'm sleeping in the garage.
Best case scenario.
Doesn't seemingly affect this man. One iota, still living the life of Riley. Susan from the town of Dunn. Welcome, Susan. What do you got for us?
Hello, Susan.
Well, I was just thinking, hi, guys. I've been thinking about this a lot myself, about what would be the appropriate kind of ramifications prison-wise for him. With 34 days work, like one day for each of the counts, that would be a little more than a month, but it wouldn't be two, you know, it wouldn't be 60 days. It would be, I don't know. I was just thinking about that.
It'd be the worst month of his life, I guarantee. But I almost think a sentence of that short length undermines the gravity of the crime. If it was worth the trial, if it was worth all the rigmarole, and he's convicted by a jury of his peers, what would be the common sentence for the common criminal who committed the same crime? I think it'd be more than, you know, a slap on the wrist in 34 days at Mar-a-Lago or maybe Rikers.
Well, I think he should be at Rikers for 34 days, actually. At least 30 days, if not longer. That's my feeling. But, or maybe for the rest of his life, would be whichever comes first. I don't know.
Whichever
maybe
comes
on, maybe
first.
Maybe on the other criming, Susan, we'll have to wait and see on that. Thank you for
he
the
does,
call. Appreciate it.
He does deserve to spend the rest of his life in prison. Probably not for the convictions in New York. But Michael Cohen got 3 years for the same criming that Trump is alleged to have committed. And Cohen committed the crime for Trump, right? He was the fixer. He was the lawyer.
It's almost like there's a little bit of precedent already there based on previous sentencing on the very same time.
And even despite the fact there was, you know, there were people being let out of prison compassionately because of the COVID pandemic, and Michael Cohen was one of them. He didn't serve his full sentence, but he still did like 18 months.
But they also drug his ass back in there again. I mean, didn't literally Barr go get his ass and drag him back in again? He was in, he was out, he was back in again, then out again, if I recall how it went down.
They also tried to stifle his ability to write a book. Like if he published a book, then he had to serve his full sentence. That was my understanding. Talking about chilling prior restraint. 844-967-2789. Cam from Appletown. Welcome back, you little scammer.
Hey, welcome, Cam, if that's your real name.
Yeah, it is, unfortunately. My parents almost named me Ferris, too. I'm not even kidding. Right. So I wanted to test out Gary's hypothesis about calling Eric Hovde, right?
Yes.
But I don't want to call Eric Hovde because I don't really want to talk to him. Because if I have to hear his mustache move against the microphone in any capacity, I think I might lose it. So instead, I decided to call Gary. I took 3 minutes, 27 seconds of searching Gary and HVAC, Wisconsin. And it came up with his business. I called. It had a whiny voice. It was Gary. But that was only his voicemail. It was 4:55. They closed at 5. And he didn't answer the phone. He didn't answer the damn phone. Can you believe that?
You mean there was a number out there and he wasn't there?
Yeah, he wasn't there. He wasn't there at all. It wasn't time for closing yet. Gary, if you're still listening, where were you? Were you listening to the greatest radio show in the world? Or were you working where you're supposed to be?
You know, we've seen Gary work, literally, Cam. We were in the studios on Brady Street some 5-6 years ago, and Gary had a service and HVAC on the neighboring roof, but we could visually see Gary on the ladder climbing, and it was late in the afternoon. I mean, we've always kind of had this, you know, afternoon drive schedule, but I did a play-by-play on Gary. And I got to tell you, I don't know for sure, Cam, but I got to think some of the audience was rooting against him.
Climbing up a ladder. He was up high, Cam.
It was like he was climbing from a second to a third story on a ladder. So he works.
He's doing more than I can.
Yeah, he's a hardworking man, Cam. And I know you don't want to be corrected, but I'm going to correct you. It's not the greatest radio show in the world. It's the greatest radio show ever.
Anyway. Why limit it to one planet, Cam?
This is what I'm saying. And why limit it to just this time frame?
You know, I was on a ladder earlier today. I felt like Gary a little bit. I'm not a conservative love muffin, but, you know, I was out there doing a little work, yeah, like know, the work in stiff stew.
You're not the most coordinated guy, man. You know, I'd be a little careful about you on a ladder.
Yeah, you know what was the craziest part? Is like once you plant that ladder, man, I'm like a fireman. I'm just climbing that ladder. And one of the earliest times, because I didn't know why, but I've got some early drain blockage, so I went and cleared it. But like the second time I go up the ladder today, starts tipping over to the left. And I'm thinking to myself, well, if I just lean to the right and start climbing on the right, I'm like, whoa. You know, like I'm going to continue climbing this ladder that's starting to tip. You know, well, if I just put enough pressure on the other side.
Just adjust, yeah, man.
But that's what one does on a ladder when it gets a little tippy, right? You just you shift your weight because, you know, nothing like crudy, svelte, 6'3", 245 pounds on the top.
45.
Like two steps over the do not step above this line on the top of the ladder there. You know, balancing to the right to keep the ladder from tilting. If Gary was doing a play-by-play on me, you know he would have been cheering against. I hope you have a great weekend, Gary. I hope you already got some fish in your belly. Probably no beer, maybe some milk. 2%. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. Final grievances of the week. Better lay them on us now. 844-967-2789.
The Devil's Advocates. Rock and roll political commentary in a top 40 world.
For listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show, our last segment of the day of Friday. You got to air some grievances. You got something to say. You better do it right now on the lines. Talk or text. Hit us up. 844-967-2789.
Dominic, if it's Wisconsin, it's the weekend. Somewhere Van Halen's playing, man. We know this. You know. We have learned this. Dom, I've been checking the text line. Some love for our pal James Santel. Jim is the best hire in radio history since one Dominic Salvia.
Oh, Thank you.
Yes, Jim was an excellent hire, but he doesn't work for me, just for the record. We just befriend these people and someone else pays them. Another one, Devil's Advocate Show. You guys should start referring to Trump as Felon 45.
Ooh, that's easier. Felon 45.
Here's another one. Jim up in Appletown texting in on WGBW for something closer to apples to apples. What kind of sentence did Martha Stewart get? Similar crime, similarly famous at the time. Martha Stewart would say, you take that back. 844-967-2789. Ellen from Cedarburg. Welcome, Ellen.
Oh, hi. This is my first time calling, and so I'm a little nervous. I've just started listening to you recently, and I just love this station. So I have a grievance. Well, besides being having to leave Milwaukee and move to Cedarburg because we couldn't afford to live in Milwaukee anymore, that was my first grievance. But my grievance right now is that it's Strawberry Festival up here in Cedarburg. And some kind of special unit of the police has put a huge long ladder out on our porch going up to the roof. And I saw a guy going up there with a very long package. And I just asked him kind of nicely, well, what are you guys doing? And it turns out that the packages were sharpshooter rifles. And they're going up on the roof. There's two of them on the corners. And what they answered me about what they're doing is that they're helping find lost children. Oh. And I,
And they were police or private citizens, Ellen?
No, they're police of some sort. I don't know exactly where they're from. But, God, I never thought they might be private citizens. No. But anyway, it's just kind of scary knowing that there's people up there, sharpshooters, in a crowd of expected 100,000. Anyway.
That's a big strawberry festival. Ellen, that's a big strawberry festival.
Oh, it's huge.
You could understand the desire to control the high ground. I mean, I've been to lots of big events. I think I've talked on the radio recently, Ellen, about a Donald Trump rally I went to in Des Moines, Iowa. There was like 40,000 people there. There were a lot of snipers on the roof that day. And that, of course, was because there was a big, barely controlled crowd. And if you got 100,000 people, you know, I'm this is the world we live in. Unfortunately, that makes a big soft target.
So. Yeah, maybe that's my grievance, is this is the world we live in. maybe it's a larger grievance.
Ellen,
anyway, I just thought I would call just for fun.
That's great that you did. Ellen, you want to know what my second favorite fruit is? Strawberries. And if we happen to be...
First?
Oh, cherries.
Not even
Door County cherries, Ellen. I'm a cherry guy. But strawberries are number two in my heart.
Right up there.
If you...
They're wonderful.
Could you send us some strawberries, Ellen?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
I mean, if there's enough strawberries in Cedarburg to feed 100,000, you know, you could yeah. ship a couple down for Diamond Crew.
Fall off the truck, Ellen. You know where we're at.
Thank you for hearing me.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. Thank you for finding us. Thank you for calling and playing along, Ellen. Love the Strawberry Festival up in Cedarburg. Cedarburg, cute, nice little area.
And thank you in advance for the future shipment of strawberries.
Can't wait. Fresh strawberries. We got the farmer's market here at South Shore that we go to, and stuff was there last weekend. First weekend, every Saturday. You know how it is. Those fresh strawberries, you can't buy them in the store like that. That tastes like real awesome, like right off the vine, strawberries. Man, it is phenomenal.
The only thing better? Cherries.
Really? Even like that? Now, do you eat cherries without the cherry pie? Like, I'll eat strawberries. I put them in my spinach, my green protein shake in the morning, you know. But I eat cherries. But even more like in a cherry pie. I mean, do you eat just regular cherries out of the container?
Cherry pie, cherry ice cream, cherry shakes.
No, you don't.
Actually, I will tell you what I actually do. I'll buy a big bag of sweet cherries or dark cherries. I like them both ways. And I will eat them by the bag full. Like, I'll grab handfuls and I'll just rinse them off in my hand. I don't even bother using the strainer. Yep. I'll just stand above the trash can. Eat and spit pits. And here's why, Dom. Because one time I was a kid and I helped make a cherry pie. And somehow someone forgot to tell us a crucial step. Pit your cherries.
Very important. You want to keep your teeth. Pit your cherries.
That's why I have very short, chiseled teeth. Dom. Cherry pits. Thank you all for listening. Hope you have a wonderful weekend. Thank you to our fine guest, James Santel. You know what we should have ended with? Although Van Halen, always appropriate on a Wisconsin weekend.
Always up in Wisconsin, yep.
Warren, she's my cherry pie. Yeah. Next time, Rich, have a great weekend, dude. Thanks for what you do. Have a great weekend, everyone. See you back on the radio Monday.